We say all the time that it's perseverance and resilience. Resilience is the antidote to adversity.
Yeah.
And the more adversity that you have, the more resilience you build if you don't crack.
Yeah. Because really it's about people building their capacity and building their resilience and having the tools and the skills to not get to that point of mental illness and not get to the point where you're shutting down. It doesn't have to be this huge time investment for people to learn really game-changing things that can completely change how they interact with the world.
I think that what you want to do is use every tool that you have in the toolbox before you crack.
Hi, I'm Laura Koons, and welcome to Prevention Pioneers. Today, we have Joe Coughlin. He is the CEO and founder of Corporate Risk Solutions. Super excited to have you here, Joe.
Thank you.
And I would love for you to just start with telling the audience more about who you are, right? You have this title, CEO and founder, but in the time that I've gotten to know you, you've done so much more than that. So just maybe start with, you know, how you came to be the CEO and founder of Corporate Risk Solutions.
Okay.
And what it is.
So what it is a risk consulting, independent risk consulting firm that primarily works with alternative capital firms, meaning private equity, hedge funds, distressed debt funds, venture capital funds. In other words, firms that have raised third-party capital from sources of endowments and from wealthy individuals, pension funds, and things of that nature. And then they repurpose those assets and buy companies and hope to get a turn or two of EBITDA and then sell them. So buy low, sell high. So we work as risk advisors to the funds, and then we work as risk advisors to the portfolio companies that they are buying. So our firm does really three different things. It does due diligence on behalf of the investors. It does stewardship during the tenure of ownership that they have the portfolio companies that they've invested in. And then we also do special projects, which could be directors and officers liability claims. It could be transactional liability. It could be hurricane storms damage. It could be earthquake. We don't know what it's going to be.
Okay.
So that's what we do as a firm. We have about 125 funds that we work with that are global in nature. And we also work with several hundred portfolio companies. So we see the entire global marketplace and we act as a liaison and a navigant for the client in the insurance space so that they don't just have to take the word of the broker and they don't have to just listen to the insurance company. So we're just trying to drive transparency into the marketplace.
Yeah, I love that. You're that trusted advisor. And, you know, I read somewhere, I believe it's on your LinkedIn profile, that you're Ray Donovan without the sex and the violence. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, well, that kind of goes back to, you know, how I got into sales, or once I realized that I could sell, was the fact that I needed analogies and metaphors. I was not a very good student in grammar school or high school or college. And, but I did okay. But, you know, they always say the world is run by C+, B- students.
Yeah.
Well, I was one of them. And, what I realized is after I got out of college, I always needed an analogy or a metaphor in order to learn. I needed to link something. So I needed an example of how something worked in order for me to think about how I could put it into practice into everyday life. The Ray Donovan thing was, Ray Donovan is a fixer. We fix things, right?
Yeah.
And I sometimes admired the way he fixed things. You know, he got things done very quickly. And I think in our world, look, we work very cohesively with insurance brokers and insurance companies and the clients and everything. So I don't want to get anybody to think that we disrespect anybody else's industry. But there's a lot of people that say that they're going to do one thing and then they do another.
Yeah.
And that part is where I find that there's a lot of passive aggressive personalities that are probably in every industry, but I just notice it probably more because it's in ours.
Well, right. And because of, from what I know about you, because of what you've done in the history of your career. You know the big players. You know all the components of the insurance world. So you kind of know where you can step and how to navigate that, where kind of the average person wouldn't. And that's one of the things that I really respect about you is your ability to connect with people and your ability to kind of build your network with good people. So that being said, I'm interested, you know, the name of the show is Prevention Pioneers. And yeah. I very thoughtfully asked you on here because, you know, I know that, you know, you building corporate risk solutions, you kind of were pioneering something in that industry. And
yeah.
So talk to me about that, but also in terms of wellness, because that's what we do. That's what we're all about. The preventative mental health, wellness programs and organizations. I'm also curious of your feedback of where you feel that fits in the bigger picture of all of this, in companies you worked for, in companies you've built, in companies you help.
Right.
How important is it? How valuable is it to the overall success and, I guess, risk factors of a healthy business?
When I started in business, it was more like... The way that mental health was treated was more like, you know, Irish foreplay, which would be like, Bridget, brace yourself, you know. That's what it was, just like, get over it, right?
Right.
Just get, you know, tough it out and just move on.
Yeah.
And, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. And I think over time, it's obviously it has changed quite a bit so that, you know, I have people in my family that... That go talk to therapists, and
yep.
there's nothing wrong with them.
Yep.
And I've said in the past, like, what's wrong with you? You know,
that old school mentality.
Yeah, exactly.
Very much.
Because
yeah.
Just get over it.
Yes, very much.
So it when I started in the I had a terrific opportunity that was offered to me. It was actually offered to me several times. And finally, it was told to me, like, listen, you idiot, I'm giving you an opportunity to work on this business. It would only take you maybe a day a week, half a day a week. And the person that told me that, he was, you know, a genius. And he probably could have done it in a half a day a week.
Yeah.
For me, it took me, you know, close to 7. But what happened is this was a private equity fund, and he had gotten really sick and tired of the fact that he was being taken advantage of on deal after deal as he was buying them. And he felt as though that the insurance pricing was too high. So he didn't trust the fact that the broker was going through the steps that needed to be taken. So he put me into this role, or he said, I'm not telling you anymore. I'm not asking you anymore. I'm telling you, I want you to do this. Give it a try. So I did. And I was thrust into this position where it was me with a firm that had been fired, but then rehired, and they inserted another person in there. So it started out in the first many months of a lot of conflict. I couldn't believe that he didn't understand the role that I was being put in
yeah.
by the private equity fund. And he didn't understand that he needed oversight like this, you know? So what started out as a very adversarial relationship turned into something that I realized that over time, he was a very good broker. And I could sell the product. So we started out with one private equity fund, and then over time moved into 20 different private equity
wow.
funds. And now that doesn't seem like a lot now, but at that time, this was an industry that was just really starting to grow.
Yeah.
So we're going back to 1985, 1986.
Yeah.
And then that we hadn't even begun. And then we hit to the 90s, and then we went on a ride. You know, it was a Nantucket sleigh ride. So it was just started working with all these different funds, all these different business silos and industries and verticals and things of that nature. So over time, that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
And that's what our business still does today, except we had invented products in the beginning, and we had more of a more focused, you know, approach that we worked with fewer brokers. And now today we're working with
yeah.
everyone.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting what you said about that old school mentality in terms of mental health, of just kind of the suck it up buttercup.
Right.
And, you know, especially in the corporate world. And I think in many businesses and in many industries, that still exists to a certain extent, you know, but with these new generations coming into the workforce, it's really interesting because they're already really into holistic living.
Yeah.
You know, they're coming into your workforce really committed to holistic living, and they're wanting that proactive and preventative mental health support and culture.
Right.
Sometimes it just comes down to language, I find, too. And it's like, if you put a term, the term resilience on it, that old school kind of group can get behind it.
Right.
You know, it's just all about how it's messaged. And it's like, what business today and what layer of that business doesn't need resilience, right? Because I think I heard you say somewhere, maybe you said it to me, that the insurance industry is the hardest that you've seen it in 40 years.
Oh, yeah. We're coming out of that that part. But yes, it was the hardest market ever. No, I would actually say ever, because I don't think that the marketplace across all lines had ever hit that level where there was... The capacity was restricted, meaning that the insurance coverage was not being offered. So you had the retrocess of markets, which fed the reinsurance markets, which fed the retail markets, which fed the consumer. Those had all dried up. So when that happened, that's what the capacity. So on property, on casualty, on all different types of specialty lines and things like that. In the past, there have been times when the umbrella markets have dried up,
yeah,
and the property markets have certainly, after, you know, severe catastrophic events have taken place, like earthquakes and things of that nature, you know, the property market will, you know, increase, you know, substantially, but it always finds what green shoots that come in, new capacity comes in, pricing comes down,
right,
and things get stabilized.
Yeah, it kind of all stabilizes. Yeah.
Right.
But those times, you know, and I think about that, and obviously we have a different lens experience because we're working with businesses at that culture layer,
right,
where you are dealing with personalities, you're dealing with presenteeism, absenteeism, you're looking at that layer of a business. From that perspective, like, talk about that.
Yeah. Well, look, I think, boy, getting just even started on COVID, I am, as an employer, I found it incredibly, incredibly frustrating, especially after we had just doubled the size of our office in December of 18. And then going into 19, it was March when everything was basically shut down.
Yeah.
Right around St. Patrick's Day, I remember being one of the last, you know, public dinners that I had. And I think as an employer, it then got turned into a, over the months and years that have followed, we've gotten into extreme cases, which is, I think this is probably something that we should talk about, that there are cases where people, and look at how I fold my arms defensively, right? But there are those that really got used to working at home very, very quickly, and they were very productive, extremely productive. And we have a few of those people in our office, and I love them. I mean, they're just incredible. And they still come into the office, but not as frequently, not full-time anymore. Then we have other people, or we've seen other people, or I've witnessed in other organizations, those that are just, you know, I mean, you're on conference calls and you see that somebody's on a, you know, a life cycle, you know, and you call them out on a text message because you don't want to embarrass them in front of the Brady Bunch, you know, or, you know, where you got 18, 20 people on there and you in a box and you want to say, you know, WTF, what are you doing? Right. And the person says, oh, I just check my emails while I'm on my life cycle, when I'm on the conference call, you know, and you're saying, get off. You know,
yeah.
I mean, really, I mean, they lost all perspective. So I think that, mental health, like I say, I witness it in my own family. I see the stress. I go out of my own business, right?
Yeah.
And I witness other places. I see my friends' kids, what they do,
yeah,
how they work. You know, there's still these banking programs that are out there that boy, when people think that they have to work hard, that you could go into a banking program and see how that works. And especially when you hit that first summer and you're told that, oh, you're going to do this Saturday and Sunday,
yeah,
all day. And that's the way it works.
Yep.
Right. And, that part, I think that what needs to be out there, and that's why I really liked what you talked about, what you were doing with experience, that you have this accessibility, and that's a lot better, I think, I personally think, than going to the HR person,
yeah,
initially and saying, I feel really stressed and I feel like I can't do the work, or I feel like you're giving me too much work. Personally, we've had situations where in our firm where people have come and they're really upset because they think that we're giving them too much work, and we haven't remotely even dialed it up yet.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah,
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. It's like the pendulum really swung to that other extreme. You know, I think we have what, 5 generations currently in the workforce,
yeah,
today, for the first time, I think, in history. We have 5 generations. And so these poor HR teams are trying to support all 5 of those generations.
That's a really good point. I hadn't even thought of it that way, but which is, you do have this culture clash that takes place.
Yes.
That is, it's within, you know, and even in my own firm, I guess I could see that.
Well,
I just know a lot of other people that are going through it.
Well, right. And, you know, I mean, really the thing too is that historically workplace wellness programs were focused on exactly what you said. You know, they'd go to HR and they would say, you know, I maybe even need to take a leave of absence. I have things going on. Or, you know, HR really had the one solution, which would be call your EAP. But that's also when it reaches the point of crisis. I mean, you deal in the business of crisis, and it just doesn't have to get to that point on the wellness side either.
Right.
Because really it's about people building their capacity and building the resilience and having the tools and the skills to not get to that point of mental illness and not get to the point where you're shutting down or you're, you know, waving the white flag and saying, I can't do this. It's like the communication skills to go to your supervisor long before you're going to HR saying my workload's too high.
Right.
You're actively communicating to your supervisor, here are my needs.
Yes.
And it's tough because the average person doesn't know how to do that. It's more complex today. The pace is a lot faster.
Right.
Our nervous systems are, you know, probably blown out way more so than we think.
Right.
You know, but so what are our options? We just leave the workforce or we increase our capacity.
Yeah.
I mean, you've built businesses, you've worked in big corporations, you've worked with big corporations. How have you built your resilience? How do you expand your capacity when you're going through hard things in life? Like, talk to me about that, because anytime I've seen you or talked to you, you're solid. You come off as solid, but a lot of us that come off as solid are really like ducks with our feet kind of moving under the surface. So are you a duck or are you, you know?
You know, it's a good question. I think I just try to, I wake up every morning like most people do. And I try to establish what kind of day it's going to be. And I think, because you know that I've got some things that are going on in my life, I truly try to put things in perspective.
Yeah.
And it's really hard because I think we all go about our days just thinking like it's going to be the same thing or it's going to be similar. And we've got goals and we've got aspirations and we hope to hit them. And it might be a sale. It might be a connection with somebody. It might be a friendship. It might be, who knows? Just planning for something. And at the end of the day, you're saying, did I get everything done that I wanted to get done? And if you did, you're very pleased with that. If you didn't, you have anxiety over that. Anxiety does nothing to help you, of course, but you know, people feel it and it builds.
Yeah.
So for the procrastinators that are out there, they're they become more frustrated and they get more stressed and things of that nature. What I try to do is I try to put things in perspective that I am, sounds so trivial, but that I am alive and that I'm lucky enough that I could choose to do what I want to do during that day. But I'm so business focused that, and I love business because of all, you know, the different investing that I've done with different people. And I love hearing about things that are happening, things that are coming down the pipe. I love hearing about the things where AI is going. And I know it's an overused, it's overused term and it hasn't even begun.
Yeah.
And, but I love seeing where, you know, some of the things that my son is investing in, some of the things that I've invested in on the venture capital side. And just knowing that, it puts me in that zeitgeist of, I'm drawing a blank on his name now, I should know, but the river, you're in the river.
Yeah, and flow.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I like being in the flow. But when you're in the flow, you're not really thinking about yourself. You're thinking about the thing, right?
Yes.
And, and it's hard. You want to just keep thinking about, like, I need to move myself into that area of calmness, into that area of just thinking about mental health. And, you know, I was watching this, it was thing on Facebook or something. I'm not on TikTok, but, you know, they always have those TikTok videos.
That How are you not on TikTok, Joe?
I'm not.
You should have your own. I could see it.
I'm not.
I could see it.
I'm not. It's just like I'm not on Instagram because my gosh, I get wrapped up in social media. They feed me videos. I got bulldog videos coming all day long and street fights and Karens in parking lots, they're feeding it to me like, you know, shovel loading, you know.
Over you just can't stop.
They can't. I'm in that algorithm and boy, I chose some bad ones, I guess. Actually, they're good ones. It's entertaining. But boy, you could want to chew up some time.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. So I was watching this TikTok video and it was like a Buddhist monk and he was saying that it's today. Today is everything, right? And I'm going to butcher that, but yesterday's already gone. Tomorrow's not here and nothing's guaranteed. So you have today and you have today to think of how you're going to be happy and how you can help other people be happy.
Yeah.
And make their lives better. And you have to choose to do that.
Do you think it took you going through what you're going through now to get to that place? Like, can you remember a time in your career when that wasn't coming easy to you and maybe you had so much stress that it felt overwhelming?
No, you know, I always felt like I had time to do more. I really did.
Wow.
As much as, because that just tells you how inefficient, you know, our use of time is.
But,
you know,
if you did
if you did a framework of a box, right? And I can't draw it, but it would be like basically put what you need to do into quadrants and attack it that way. But we don't. We attack things that, you know, could be put off for a week, you know, and we attack that now, but that took 2 hours to do where you could have taken care of the thing that you really needed to take care of. And you don't delegate properly and you don't do the thing. So I always knew I could do more.
Yeah.
And I think I've wasted an enormous amount of time. But I had the energy. And when you say, was it easy to focus or something like that? Right now, where I find it's easy to focus and to get things done. It's not because, you know, I'm in my 60s and I'm getting old and, you know, and I've got, some health issues and things like that. But it's that there's so much to be done and that could be done. And I personally, as you know, I've been watching all these things that are going on with all this anti-Semitism. And as an Irish Catholic, I and many other people are just very, very offended by it.
Yeah.
And I remember being in college and was taking Western Civilization. It was sophomore year. And I had a professor that, you know, you talk about mental health. I mean, he had lost a lot of his family in the Holocaust, and he was telling us at the end of Western Civilization that we came to, which ended with the, you know, Nazis in, you know, in Europe. And he was telling the classroom last day of school, it can happen again. It can, and it could happen here. And we were all like, kind of like, yeah, I don't think so. Not here, you know?
Yeah.
And guess what? We're here.
Yep.
And that's where we are. And so think about this. Think about mental health. If you're a Jewish person and living anywhere, never mind in New York City, where you used to maybe wear, you know, a Star of David, or you used to be able to freely practice, you know, your religion, you now are hiding it and you're doing whatever you can, and people are barring you from going to class. That shouldn't happen with anyone,
right?
Any religion. So, and it's so much projection that goes on. So, mental health wise, on both sides, boy, wouldn't it be great to just, you should almost have, people should be mandated at all these places to go through some counseling.
Well, right. And just to have that education, it's just so powerful. And that's really, you know, what I was saying earlier, it doesn't have to be this huge time investment for people to learn really game changing things that can completely change, not just the culture within an organization, but can change how they interact with the world. And I think, you know, I love what you said about efficiency, about how, and I'm wondering, a follow-up question on that is, do you think in today's world with technology and all the distractions that we have, do you think that has changed the efficiency of businesses for the better or for the worse or for both? Because we do have some new technologies like AI and some things that help increase efficiency. But what you said really stood out to me about, okay, well, historically, I felt I could get more, you know, I don't know if you were saying you felt you could get more done. You've remained efficient. But it made me think, you know, with the pace of today, with all of this, the distractions, it would be easy to lose sight of what's important, what should be focused on, you know, what goes in those quadrants, because you have so much coming at you.
For the people that are in... That are going into work, you know, every day. There is that commutation time. And, you know, even being down here in Florida, you see what's even gone on with the traffic. You know, what used to be, 5 years ago, even, you know, you'd be able to, you know, cross town in 5 minutes.
And now,
it could take you 25, right? And so, you know, when I do watch these videos and I watch these girls that are crying, you know, saying that they had to work a 9-to-5 job and that they, you know, you can't believe the stress that they're under. I think it's funny first, and then I sit back and I say, it really is, it's sad. And, you know, how can you get to that person and explain the fact that you just graduated college and you're just starting what is going to be most likely, you know, a 40-year, 45-50 year, you know, cycle of work of some nature. And you've either got to get yourself, you know, Missy, or, you know, if it's a guy that's doing the same thing, you've got to get into a place that you enjoy, or you find the work so rewarding that you don't complain about it, you know? And if I was in just starting out, we say all the time that it's perseverance and resilience. So those two words are just constantly. And I was thinking about, what do they say? Is that resilience is the antidote to adversity.
Yeah.
Right. And the more adversity that you have, the more resilience you build if you don't crack.
Right.
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 So I think that what you want to do is use every tool that you have in the toolbox before you crack.
Mental health challenges make up 10% of workplace healthcare costs and lead to billions in lost productivity each year. Traditional employee assistance programs were created to help address these challenges. However, they are often underutilized because they are focused on reactive solutions instead of proactive solutions. That's why we created Spirence, to prioritize mental wellness in order to prevent mental illness. Spirence's science-backed platform offers an extensive and continually growing library of mental health courses crafted and delivered by clinical experts. The platform also features live events, interactive coaching, on-demand support tools, and dedicated support for managers. Our approach results in over 800% higher utilization than traditional EAPs. The world is moving towards proactive care, and Spirence is leading the way. Spirence, the future of workplace mental health.
Well, you and I have talked about this. I know people, as senior executives, you know, in our industry and others that have just checked out, you know, and hit walls that you never saw coming.
Yep.
So you don't know what's going on in everybody's head. And you can just try to communicate. You just try to make the work environment as fun as you can, as stimulating as you can.
Right. Well, and that can happen when people don't have the tools. So they're going, and that kind of space of hypervigilance, you know, especially like the pace today, and you're going, and you don't have the tools to maintain that and
right.
to build your resilience and your capacity, then that's when you start to see the mental health conditions develop. And it's tough because once a mental health condition is present, you know, that's when you're looking at needing therapy. You're looking at possibly needing treatment long term. That's when people get in cycles of medications that they may or may not need.
Right.
So that can really snowball, you know, once it gets to that point. And I'm so glad that you're mentioning this generation that's in college right now, because they're a very interesting generation. You know, they, to your point, and I actually read this somewhere, she's going to be another guest on this podcast. Dr. Jessie Gold talks about this. She's the head of wellness at University of Tennessee. And she was talking about how the current generation, they're so quick to go straight to, I need therapy for this. I need therapy for this. I have anxiety. I have depression. It's like, you could just be having a rough day. And here are the tools to make sure you don't end up with anxiety or depression. Here are the tools to stop yourself from going into that cycle and creating those thought patterns that are going to take you to a place where you actually have clinical anxiety.
Right.
So it's tough because COVID really swung that pendulum, like we were saying, which is great. You know, I'm a 17-year mental health advocate. You know, I've done a ton of advocacy, especially during the opioid crisis, you know, flown all over the country advocating for people just to be talking about it.
Right.
And, you know, and so in some ways, the way where we are today is a dream come true for mental health advocates. But in another way, it's like, okay, the pendulum actually swung too far.
Right.
Because not everything is a crisis. Not everything requires treatment. Not everything is a condition and a disorder that requires this grandiose action and these big steps. Educate yourself to know the difference. And that's where it's really important. Obviously, that's what we're super passionate about here.
Right.
That's what we do. And, you know, I think workplaces have a really unique opportunity to do that, to provide people with those tools, and to also, honestly, create happier employees. Employees are going to be more loyal to them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they've given them the tools to keep themselves well. It's not about illness. It can be about wellness.
Exactly.
You know?
No, and I really liked your model. I think it does work. And I think that the per capita cost, when you factor that in, whether you're a small company or a big company.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, large companies, you just see it more because there's HR, real formalized, you know, HR departments and they roll out benefit packages in different ways. But I just think that any size company to just know that you have that. What's your market size though? Where do you go?
Well, where's
your ideal?
All industries. Well, probably 1,000 and up is where we are
most effective,
gaining the most popularity. Honestly, we have companies now from 42 up to 6,500 employees, and utilization's pretty consistent among those. The average, I think, we're 24% platform wide. For companies, so 24% of their employees. And then we have one company approaching 40%. They have about 500 employees. So it's hard to say what size we're most effective with. I think that's more industry. I think you can break it down in industry.
And maybe is tech would probably be pretty stressed right now.
Tech is there.
Yeah.
Financial industry.
Financial, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We actually just launched a content partnership with one of the largest financial institutions in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So they have some of our content. They're going to pilot it and... So they're prioritizing it.
Right.
They see, because the data is there, it shows that this preventative approach
right.
can prevent so many issues.
Exactly. I can't tell a lot of stories because it would just be, people that I have personally worked with or
right,
know
right,
of.
Right.
But I know a lot of situations where you just can't know. But I have seen that where people have literally can't get out of bed, and you wouldn't have known that. And that you wouldn't have known that at 6:30 the night before you found out that they couldn't get out of bed at 8 o'clock the next morning. And so how can you know? And to know that you could have somebody other than that person reaching out and getting to a psychiatrist or, psychologist of some nature. It's a very personalized, it's a very personal issue.
Well, it very much is. And that's the thing. It takes a lot for that person who can't get out of bed to do anything about it at that point. But if that person, let's say, here's an example. We had somebody a couple of months ago. Obviously, everything's confidential. I would never give more details on that person other than it was a member. And they came in and they watched a video on substance use disorders 101.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back an hour. They watched a second. These are 2-minute videos that just show you, do I have one? Do I not? What's the criteria for one? So I know when I'm crossing the line. And then a couple hours later, they picked up the phone and called to see if they needed residential help, outpatient help. So sometimes it's just a matter of educating
right.
themselves and saying, we had another incident. I think this speaks to your example of where it was actually an HR director. And they were like, I was worried. I had a really bad anxiety condition. And I was waking up at 3 a.m. and my wheels were turning and I didn't know what was going on with me. And I'm like, do I need some sort of help? And they watched something on anxiety and intrusive thoughts. And they were like, oh, it's actually normal.
Yeah.
I am able to go back to sleep at 3 a.m. This is a normal thing. It's called an intrusive thought. Now I can label it when I wake up, shut it down and go back to bed.
Well, hey, I don't want to take business away from you, but I do. One thing that I think is that what manic depressive used to be or is now called bipolar, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I believe personally that everyone, male and female, go through cycles of some sort. It might be a quarterly cycle. It might be a biannual cycle, but you can't stay up.
Agree.
Forever.
Yep.
Right? And
absolutely.
So as much as euphoria that I feel at times and the excitement and energy that I want to go out and do all these, great things, you can't and you have to crash.
Yep.
And that crash feels like it's not depression. It's just like I self-diagnosed that cycle, in me that I've just tracked,
Yeah.
Over time, it's not uniform. It doesn't, it's not a quarterly thing, but I do know when I'm just in that place where I'm just like, you lay low.
Yeah. Go play some golf.
Yeah. Just do something.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't just grab a bottle and go into a closet or something.
Yeah. But some people do. That's the thing because they haven't found, they haven't learned that,
right.
Those positive coping
exactly.
mechanisms and,
And I didn't have a number to call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't have that benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. If only.
If only.
That's the thing though. Yeah. A lot of people don't even call. They won't even pick up the phone. They're watching the digital products. That's the world we live in today. They want, and I'm even like the college students, 65% of college students today learn about their mental health and wellness in general, even health online.
Well, I think this, my watch, I was going to wear a different watch, but today this thing has gone off like, and it's told me my calmness and mindfulness like three times. So really? I wonder what it's picking up. It must be.
We have to, let's dissect that.
It's got
to
be my heartbeat or something like it, like pitter patter, like you're, it's just going like, you know, racing.
So, you know, back to the analogies, as you were saying in the beginning.
Yeah.
One of the favorite analogies that I've read or heard was your analogy about you feel like Forrest Gump sometimes.
Oh.
So please talk about that. And you know what? When I saw it and getting to know you in the bit that I have, not very well, but well enough to know this, I see it. I see how you could know so many amazing people. And have met them in the most amazing ways.
Well, again, when Forrest Gump came out, what's Forrest Gump about? You know, it's about this very unique individual that ends up being at the crux or the epicenter of the biggest events that ever took place during his lifetime. And, so every major event that ever took place, there is Forrest Gump, and he just shows up, and he is a person of, you know, of less than, you know, you know, substantial IQ and everything like that. And so I related to that.
But are you saying you have a low IQ?
No, you know, I have a very, I think I will say this. I think I have a very high EQ, right?
Yeah, right.
What I meant about that is I don't want to name, I'll name some people, but I've ended up meeting people at the perfect times.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things I will say is the time that, I met this young guy out in, I was asked to give my, opinions and help raise some capital for a fund that was being raised by a good friend of mine. And, I was out in San Diego and I was on my way to LA that night. And I was going out, for dinner with, the William Morris agency, one of their executives. And I ended up meeting, in his hotel room that night, knocking on his door. Prince answered the door.
Oh, wow. You know?
And, but that's not the story. That's just part of the night. But I ended up pulling off the 405 freeway on my way to Los Angeles, and I had an early dinner with two people, and one was a person whose father had a family office, and the other was a tech investor, and we talked for about a half hour, and in that half hour, we basically listened to the son of the father that had the family office. And I was there to just answer any questions they might have about the fund that was being raised.
Yeah.
And so about a half hour after into this dinner, the family office guy says, well, I don't know who's investing, but we're not. And I said, what do you mean you're not? You know, the person that's raising the fund thinks you are. And he said, well, we're not doing it. We're going to wait for the, you know, fund too. So that's another 5, 7, 10 years cycle before that would ever even come around. And so with that, the quiet guy, the technology guy, he had this little company called PayPal, but I didn't know what PayPal was. So he said in his quiet little lilting voice, he said, Joe, do you mind telling me why you're investing into, you know, the fund? And I told him and gave him about 6, 7 reasons. And he asked me how much I was putting in. I told him, and he says, I'm going to do what you're doing. So I came out into the parking lot, and I got in the car, and I got the phone call from the general partner of the fund. And he said, how did it go? And I said, well, you got stabbed in the back by the other guy, you know, by the family office guy. But Elon said, you know, yes, he's in.
Wow.
And so I didn't know who Elon was, you know, but I over the next year, I probably went out to L.A. about 5 times. And now I'm a limited partner in the same fund as him.
Right.
So it's just like you and I, if we invest in a fund, you're no more special than I am.
Right.
You might put more in or less, but in this case, we had put the same amount in. So I would go out to dinner with him and he and his first wife, Justine, or I would just go out with he and we talk about, I found that as long as I kept, you know, interested in the subject matter or I could right. carry a conversation. So all we talked about mostly was elliptical orbits and space, you know, and rockets and science and things. And it was fascinating. But a year now, this is again in that same year, I'm out in Chicago and we're looking through investment memorandums because I was on the advisory board of advisory committee of Fund One. And we're looking at these things and all of a sudden we're looking at this offering to be part of, you know, this electric car company called Tesla. And I'm like, what is this? Because we're a private equity fund. We're not a venture capital firm.
When was
firm.
This?
This is, I don't know, 2001, 2002, wow. something like that.
Yeah.
I have to look. But so I'm sitting there like, we can't make an investment into this, you know, because we're a private equity fund. We're not venture. So we need pro forma. We need financials. We yeah. need... We need income, right? And revenue, sales. So the general partner, who is still a very good friend and incredibly successful, really pleaded with us to, is that a word? To please, we have to invest. This is the smartest guy I've ever met. And this guy, to me, was one of the smartest guys I've ever met.
Yeah.
So we capitulated and we invested into Tesla at a, I'll just say this. We invested at a very low number and it's been a wild success. And then we've invested in everything that he's done since then.
Amazing.
So that's one. That's one. I've got a number of those.
And I think that speaks to your ability to read character and to truly connect with people and to take time with people. That's one thing that I see you doing. You invest your time into the people that you connect with. And I think that's such an important and rare quality. So with that, thank you so much for being here with us today. I certainly enjoyed it. I hope our audience did as well. We would, in fact, love to have you back if you'd be willing to come again and tell more great stories.
Absolutely.
Great. And with that, thank you so much for being here with us today on Prevention Pioneers. Stay tuned for another episode soon. We hope that you subscribe, like, and share this episode and get excited. More is coming on preventative mental health. Thank you.